within Kraft and Rizzo, presenting The Truth.
And you are listening to Dread Radio with myself, Reepso, and, of course, Mr. Ed Kraft. How are you doing today, Ed?
Doing great. How you doing, Reep?
Good. I had to work today, but I'm done with that, so I'm just sitting, relaxing, having a beer, enjoying the sunny weather in California. And don't be jealous if it's not sunny where you're at. I'm enjoying it, but...
Well, it's not so sunny. Actually, it's pretty sunny, if I understand, over in England, so despite the volcano and all that ash they've got over there.
What a pain in the... But that must be to try and fly over there.
I know. Our guest is from there tonight, so but I hear it's pretty sunny. Which, by the way, we've got with us... we got two guests with us. One is from in here in the U.S., and the other is actually from over in England, the U.K. And, of course, one of our guests is here with us from the U.K., as I said. It's Professor John Searle, and our U.S. guest is Bradley Lockerman. And so why don't we start with you, Bradley, and why don't you tell us a little about yourself and, of course, John, and explain why you're introducing John tonight, because he is clinically deaf and he's here with us. And that's something we understand, as we mentioned many times. My fiance is actually deaf, all the way deaf, so we're very used to it.
Thank you, Ed, and hello to you and Reep and your wonderful audience. Appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. Just real quick on John Searle, he did have a disadvantaged, somewhat brutal childhood. So there were impacts around his head. And just to clear that up, he is clinically deaf. And John is perfectly comfortable about talking about this. So we can talk about it with him because he's with us. And yeah, I met him years ago in 1994. I was with another film company up in Colorado, and I met this sky blue-eyed, bright-eyed, incredible individual that told me a story. And guys, I got to tell you, it is the wildest story I had ever heard in my life about a generator, and that generator happens to fly. And so it was an absolute stunner. He spoke to me for about 35 minutes. My jaw dropped. My eyebrows went to the top of my head. And all I could say at the end of him speaking was, "You're a movie." And one thing led to another. I ended up in England in 1996 at Middlesex University. And I watched this man spellbind an audience for 10 hours straight, talking about the Levity disc, talking about the Searle effect generator, and absolutely spellbinding his audience. It was a university venue, you know, one of those big lecture halls, and he had parts and evidence and pieces. But John will get into that, and he mostly, guys, he mostly likes to talk about, he'll talk about anything with you, but he mostly likes to talk about the present-day development and how he's bringing this forward once again, both for examination and for people to challenge if they wish to challenge. And he also likes to talk about some of the more amusing stories from the past. So why don't we just say hello to him. John, are you there?
Hello, Brad. I'm here. I hope
hello,
you can hear
my
me.
Friend. John, how's the weather in the UK today?
It's not been too bad, but I've been so busy I haven't really noticed.
That's great. You got Ed and Reep here, so I'm just going to let them have it. Fire, guys.
Hello, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Good. I love your accents. I love it.
Well, I'm ready and full of go.
How are you? Are you guys able to? Are you out there able to see any of the smoke from the volcano that's overhead?
John, did you get that? They're asking about the smoke from the volcano, John.
I don't see it, no.
Bright sunny day, I take it then.
Well, not too bad here. I mustn't grumble.
Well, in fact, it's 2 o'clock in the morning for John, so...
Yes, I know.
Oh, well, that's right, that's right.
Yeah, Ed, you know, time zones.
Yeah, I forget about that way out here since I moved out here to the West Coast. John, why don't you tell us a little about the device that you created, the SEG?
Well, you know, people think that I never did it, but I did. It came from dreams as a child. It was being in the right place at the right time. I was placed in the British Electrical Rewinds to learn to become an electrical engineer. This brought me in contact with electric motors, stripping them, rewinding them, generators and magnetic items. Quite naturally, there would be an incident where a docket would make me question it. And the day came where we had this docket for cable, two and a small two, the back of it, and I said to the foreman, what did this mean? He said, two squares. I said, what's that? So he just drew four squares, two by two. I said, well, surely every square has a value. No, he said. So I worked on this. Why did a dream always show squares, never any other shape? So I looked at the squares when I got back. One or two, of course, you can't do nothing with, and I know why. That's the DNA of the structures. It starts with square three, as marked by the pebble in the dream. And it's from this game that all the technology comes from. A simple game, hopscotch. Who would ever dream that that would hold so much information?
It's always for the somebody. Simple things, isn't it? Always the simple things.
Yes. And, you know, people would never give it credit, but because I couldn't hear and I couldn't understand the slang of Suffolk, which was a new place for me at 4 years old, I wasn't able to communicate like ordinary people. So I was classed as rather backward, but they never checked out why. They did a bit of beating to try and see if that would help me to learn, but it never helped. All it did was just to make the backside hot.
And I tell the guys...
It never improved my learning.
And a couple of things for your audience, guys. When John mentions the two with the superscript two, he's talking about two squared, naturally. But this was on a piece of paper, and he was sent to the market. But it's the beginning of his understanding of his dream, which involved the hopscotch game, the eight blocks, and you hop along and you throw a pebble in a number and you try not to hit that number. And it's the number eight, the number four, the number two, and each of these numbers in squares was the value that John's talking about. The two by two block of four squares that the man drew were empty, and to him, it didn't make any sense that it was empty. And of course, it matched up. It was the first match with his dreams. And Searle began to learn things. And as he learned things, they related to his dream and ultimately ended up in the development of the SEG.
All right. What exactly does this SEG do now?
Well, it's a simple converter of random energy around itself. It draws in into a uniform state, and this comes out as immense powerful electrical power you can use. Now, there's enough energy everywhere for the SEG to work. Even in space, there's no problem.
Yes, there's energy even in a vacuum. A lot of people don't realize that.
This is it. Yeah. And all it does, it draws it in, compresses it, then it turns it into a uniform instead of a random state. And that comes out as a powerful energy source. And you're not burning nothing. That's the beauty of it. And the SEG rollers that produce the transfer of energy from one point to another floats as it rotates. So there's no wear or tear, therefore no noise. So therefore, it's something you stick in the wall and forget about. And you just hand it down from your family to the next and there to the next. And in a car, you just change the body when you get fed up the body. Just stick a new body on and you're away. It's a very simple machine, but the technology is complex.
What separates this, or what makes this different from a separate motor or a reluctance motor?
Well, with normal electric generators and that, you've got to have some form of input to it, because it's all in random motion and comes out in random motion. In this case, we are doing something different. We are producing a uniform state. All energy within the materials are rotating in the same direction and transfer over and to the final ring, and you've got what we call a very powerful beam of energy. If you increase the power enough, you can make it as a welder to cut steel.
Now, in the past, I've noticed some of these devices you've created, actually you've put into discs, flying discs, I would say. What effect does this have, and how does it create anti-gravity? Isn't there an anti-gravity application to this as well?
Well, no, it's not really anti-gravity. It is gravity, and the power unit pushes half of the gravity internally outside, which helps to make a what we call bow wave around the craft. But because, as Newton said, two lights reject, that is true. Because of this half a G of gravity around the outside of the craft, it is forced to lift. But it's not the only thing that makes it lift. It goes superconductor. And between these two states, it will lift off very quick from the face of the Earth. That is why we have to put so much power on the top to let it slowly climb out. Otherwise, we knock down trees and houses due to the rush of air trying to fill the gap, because it causes a vacuum around itself. And that all helps space to suck it up.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, Ed, I just wanted to interject one thing. John refers to it early on, it was called a slender disc. Then it was dubbed the levity disc. And ultimately, as he understood it, the inverse gravity principle that he's named it, the IGV, the inverse gravity vehicle, was the last name, and that's the name that you see. But it's more of an inverse gravitational situation for your understanding.
All right, but this actually it doesn't provide lift in any way, which is basically in opposition to gravity. Does it?
Now, what is happening here? First of all, slender disc is the legal term of the structure for registration with the civil aviation authorities, because they need a defined structure, and that's what slender disc is. It's because it is an absolute structure, and we do not exceed above 8 degrees angle. But coming back to the craft, it lifts because when you power up, the structure goes superconducting and will remain so until you change that state by force. And the Earth doesn't like it, because the Earth is a magnet, so it tends to push it up. Because it's inside a vacuum, it is easy for the Earth to shove it up out the way. On top of that, we also got the fact that the craft is getting colder and colder, and this means more energy is drawn into it, and therefore more energy to use. And if we look at the fact of going to Mars, it's only a 2-month ride for us. To the moon, it's only an hour run, really a bus stop run. And the International Space Station, just the same, is a local bus ride for the IGV.
Still there, John? Okay, I think we lost you for a minute there. Could you repeat that?
The craft itself, the IGB, to the International Space Station, it's just a bus ride in relation to rocketry technology. So, and to the moon, it's just a bus ride.
So are you saying it could be applied as a propulsion system, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Hmm.
That's very interesting, right. Actually.
Well, all right, let's compare this to... Now, I know we have the technology now. If you remember these TIE fighters at Star Wars, you know, they had these TIE fighters, which actually stands for Twin Ion Engine. We actually have the technology of these ion engines now that could actually take us to Mars. What makes this different than an ion engine that could actually get us to Mars? I know they're slower, but how does this thing... provide us, and that basically would be provide us with free energy. What makes this any different?
Well, first of all, it's all magnetic. You're not burning nothing. There's nothing being burned. It is using the forces of the planets to push you along. And you may think that you need such a lot of power, but really you don't. Because the minimum velocity required to escape the pull of the Earth's gravity field is approximately 11.18 kilometers per second. But the actual velocity required to reach Mars is approximately 11.44 kilometers a second. The reason is, for satellites and that, by rocketry, the Sun would draw them in, the extra parts would push them away a bit. The IGB, on the other hand, is being pushed away from the Sun, and we need the extra speed to put it back on course. So we're just opposite to rocketry. But we're not burning nothing.
Interesting. Very interesting. Now, I do know, and you know, we're coming, there has been work. Now, your work began back in, if I'm correct on this, and if I'm reading it correctly, began back in the, was it the 60s, where you early 1960s, when you actually began your real hard work on this?
That's correct. And by 68, I was called a bad boy, because I was upsetting everybody.
I like the way you put that.
In fact, funny enough, back there in 1956, Ehrman took a pot shot at me and told the police I was frightening his pigeons.
Okay, well, now this was with the devices, I hope. You weren't just chasing the pigeons around. Now, what separates your work from the work of individuals like Tim Ventura, who has anti-gravity devices? I'm not sure if you're familiar with that type of work.
I'm not familiar with that work, but there are a lot of people working on ideas. I wish them the greater luck, because the state of the world is such, we've got to change our conditions, our technology, to improve this planet's health. If we don't, we're all doomed. So I wish them luck.
More with that statement.
Well, I've actually, now this is a device I've actually seen work. In fact, they sell, there are working models of this that you can buy kits of out on the internet that will actually fly. They even used an example of this on the Mythbusters television show. And, you know, they did testing with it. And it you know, they call it anti-gravity, but it's not really anti-gravity, because there is some electrical charge that is caused by the connections between the electricity and the aluminum foil beneath it. It does cause some effect on the airflow beneath it that creates lift. So technically, it's not anti-gravity, but it is one of those energy forms that, or rather, one of those means that really doesn't. It does involve some type of free energy, you know.
Well, you know, if I may, John, anti-gravity is almost one of those words like perpetual motion, anti-gravity. They kind of set up a mindset where it's anathema to physics, or, you know, it's a very abhorrent word in the world of physics, and I don't want to sound any smarter than I am, but I have with experience with people that have told me that this is not an area they want to go. And in fact, John Searle, he doesn't like the word anti-gravity either, and he can give you a better explanation of what the IGB actually does. But again, perpetual motion, for instance, people push that away because they're abhorrent to that perpetual motion. However, if you look at an atom and you see the electrons moving, they are in perpetual motion. If you look at your table essentially is in perpetual motion. So if you get into the deeper quantum level, everything that we know is in perpetual motion. John, is that close to being right?
That is correct, yes. But I don't like using the word in my work because people take the wrong meaning, that it's impossible. And that. But any case, regarding the samples you're talking about, when I was 18 in the military, I used to have a device which I was checking how much static energy actually caused lift. And when I left the forces, the officials sent me a letter to say, do you want us to pack up this electrified butterfly net of yours and forward it on to you? I told them, no, they can keep it. It's done the work I wanted to do.
Well, now, okay, I got to hear about this butterfly net. Well, what exactly was the butterfly net, John?
It was two very fine wire meshes. One plate was possibly charged to see what the effects was, and the other was negative charge. And the negative charge showed up interesting effects, that it tend to push air away from it. And that is what interests me. That also told me that the static of the power unit for the flying side had very little effect from the static side in its lift. It just played a part in helping to push the air away from the vehicle. So there was something else that was making it lift. And it was to take another few years before I got the whole picture right.
Interesting.
Well, let's say you're making a generator. There you are. You're making what you hope is going to be a generator to power your house. And a stupid thing lifts off to the ceiling. And you say to the landlady, that's a stupid thing. Why is it doing up there? And I tried to put it down. I couldn't. So the landlady had to get up to put a screwdriver in to stop the rollers running. Then I found, to my misfortune, my hands were stuck on it, and she had to pour warm water on my hands to free them.
Wow.
So I learned that was running cold when it's running, and certainly it is not the thing you should do inside. Because I thought by adding more weight to it, it would remain on the table, but I was wrong. It didn't remain on the table. In fact, it didn't remain on the ceiling. It went through it and up to the roof, demolishing the house.
Now, how much weight did you add to it to try and keep it down?
Well, I said that weight must have run about 2 pounds in weight, clamped on the bottom to keep it there. But that was a silly thing to do, as I discovered. Never do experiments like this inside a house.
Unless you own it, you know, and you don't have a landlady who's going to come down on you.
No, but she jumped. She never suffered from rheumatism. Everything I did, she would hold a while for soldering. And when I say switch, that won't blow the fuse. No, bang. That's what you said, it wouldn't blow the fuse. And she jumped in the air. She kept her limbs well free. And one day when I came home from work, she was laughing her head off. I said, what's the matter? She said, I poked a wire in that unit there and it threw me out the window into the garden. She said, I said to her, good, the window was open, otherwise we'll have a big bill. I said, don't stick wire cup of wine things you don't understand.
That, you know what? That is very good wisdom right there.
Yeah.
And John, tell Ed and Reap what happened to that unit after it crashed through the house.
Well, that unit went outside, it hovered. And when it hovered, in those days we only had long wave radio, which means you had a long arrow while arrowing outside. And of course, they didn't like this static. They just load and overload the arrow capacitor, and the radios will all come on and that fool blast. You couldn't turn them off. And of course, I wasn't very welcome around the area. But after a few minutes, strange, it just went up and up and up. And we never found any signs of it. And I believe Newton's laws was playing its part here. It would continue in a straight line until some force changed that state. And therefore, it probably still going on and on.
So, well, does the device, if you were to use the device now, would it cause interference with current day electronics? I mean, would it wreak havoc on it? I mean...
Oh, no, we discovered, well, scientists discovered lot of the problems. We changed the way we laid up the SEG. And instead of the fuels focusing on the ground, burning a ring and lifting the ground when it took off, which they said was due to the iron in the ground, by reversing the structure concept of the SEG, there's no burning of the ground, no lifting of the material, and what you've got is now a bow wave around the equator of the crop. That's the midway. And that you see glows. And what you see colour will depend on how high the voltage is raised on the generator before it's grounded to the pins. That gives off photons, and it's photons that are trapped in the magnetic donut around the craft. Eventually they will bump together and return to electrons, and they will be drawn back to the shell of the craft to be reused, recharged and reused. Now this is where scientists come up with a good point. They said, in that case, no work is done. Interesting point. You've got a reservoir of water. It's dropping, it's falling a distance, and collected energy. Now, the energy is released to the cups of the wheel. That turns a axle. That drives the motors that are punching holes in metal. Now, if we just put a pump on and pump the water back to the reservoir, which there is no reason why we can't, then you're telling me that all those holes we punched in metal, in that metal sheet, will all disappear. And it will need to be repunched again. Now, you and I know such a statement is stupid. The holes will still be there. And therefore, the electrons going back to the craft will not suddenly put the craft back to where it was before they were discharged.
I'll tell you what, John, you're far smarter than me.
Well, they say they talk silly without thinking of what they say. That's the problem. They don't look at what you're stating.
Yeah.
They don't listen. That's the problem.
And that's one of the reasons why you probably don't use the term. There's a couple terms that you don't use because once you do, it kind of turns people off. I know that.
This is it.
Yeah.
You're right. And it's a shame because it's a great technology.
Well, now, how do you control that if it just goes up and up and up? Now, if we were to put this in a craft, okay, you mentioned that these things could be put, and I know you've done work where you put these in large circular craft. Let's call them almost flying discs. How could you control something like that once you got it up in the air?
Well,
you know, to go forward, backwards, upside down, or something like that.
Yeah, but you do... You can do all these acts, which I have done so often, but we cannot use a normal radio control system for model aircraft. It's a good, the craft moves too fast, turns too sharp. You have to use ham operators. You need them to cover the area of Mrs. Croft. We travel in a minute. So you need to be able to control it. And we do depend on how it operates. In fact, as we move forward again, we restarted the redevelopment in the USA. When the project comes on show, ham operators would be needed again to handle the flight characteristics of the craft. And for people in the USA, we are making a model of the IGV, and we'll be able to demonstrate it in places to show you how the different parts work of it by radio control.
Now, could you put, like, to control it, would you use several of the devices put together so that they would give you the ability to move it back and forth? Could you do that? Can you use them?
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. We call them flight cells. The Civil Aviation People Authority would not accept a structure that you could not change the shape of. In case of emergency, you have to crash land. You can move it out the way of buildings by the use of the air as you fall through it. So for there, and to please them, we add these 64 sections around the rim, which you can open to act like tail end of a plane, so that they can see something that could be used by the air to push the craft away from buildings. So
be
we put them
ports
in.
They could look through, right?
Yeah, you can go left, right. Well, in fact, you can flip it over 180 degrees almost instant, and it's coming back on the straight line as it went out. No aeroplane could do that.
Yeah, and if I may, guys, just to clarify some of the things, the flight cells really aren't required. It was a condition put on John by Civil Aviation that should the power fail, should somehow the SEG fail, which John, of course, contends it never will, but should it fail, what happens to this massive weight? Now, these discs were anywhere from 15 or 16 feet out to 41 feet in diameter. Now, they're extremely heavy because of the materials inside, the SEG inside, all of the control devices, etc. So it's a massive weight when it's up there in the sky. And it's something that is really hard to fathom. And yet this man was able to continue to progress with what he was doing. Is that about right, John?
That is correct. The demo one was 11, finished up at just over 10 tons, because they're just under 11 tons. That is some weight per model.
And that would have been about 21 feet in diameter?
21 feet, yes. Yeah. 21 feet. They're most famous of all the structures because we allowed a million to watch us make it.
I think there's some photographs, too, on your website, on the DVD website, of you guys building one of these.
That's correct. That's the demo one. That was a test model to check that the manned flight craft we were asking donations for, called Starship is Seeker, every detail was correct, everything fitted right as we needed it to. And Jenny had a nice lady standing on top for the press to photograph, wearing the shortest skirt she could to make sure the cameras kept flashing.
More genius right there.
Now, that's a smart man. When he's asking for a vest, always put the lady in the short skirt up front.
Yeah, that always works when you want something to be well photographed. Always use a young woman in short skirt. It works.
Is it okay if I take notes today on some of these? Can I quote you on some of these?
Now, what happened to these original devices?
Well, the trouble was that I understand from the owner of the land that people were coming from all parts of the world and they were breaking bits of the property to take back to show that they'd been there. In the end, they asked, because they didn't know where I was, they asked the scrap merchants to come and remove it. I understood that it took them ages to cut it up. And packed out way. But the thing is, they were the good days. I don't know if I'll ever see those days again, but let's hope in America I will again see those days appear.
Nice. All right, gentlemen, it's time for a break, if that's okay with you.
Nice.
Yeah, just a couple minutes. Play a little Johnny Cash, take a break. You're listening to Dread Radio on ReapRadio.net and Jackalope Radio 105 FM. Glad to be here. Glad to have our guests on board. We'll be back in, give me 1 second, 3 minutes, 38.5 seconds. Don't touch that mouse button.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will make you hurt. I wear this crown of thorns upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts I cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else, I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will make you hurt. If I could start again, a million miles away, I would keep myself, I would find a way.
All right, welcome back live here to Dread Radio. I'm Ed Kraft along with Reapso and our guest tonight, Radley Lockerman here in the U.S. and, of course, Professor John Searle from the U.K. And we're talking about the SEG and the Searle effect. Before we get back into that conversation, a couple quick announcements. We want to thank our sponsors, of course, Reapso .net, which we can be heard live on here, as well as our simulcast and sponsor, Jackalope 105 FM. And you can check that out also on the web at www.jackaloperadio.com. And make sure you guys check out, Haunted Tour America.
Haunted America Tours.
Haunted America's Tours, right. .com. And also, coming up tomorrow night, if you haven't already heard, Brian Dunning will be, what is the university there?
Ohlone College University, sponsored by the Ohlone College Psychology Club, and it'll be a grand talk. He's going to talk about health scams and myths, so it should be very interesting. And, yeah, I think Brian was, he was great on Reapsco Radio the other day. Be happy to meet up with him and listen to him talk some more.
Yeah, and that's at 7 p.m. There's tickets still available. I think they're only $10. If you can't, you know, if you can be there, be there. And by the way, that college, I found it always has interpreters for the deaf. Lisa was very pleased to find that out. Sheldon, by the way, thank you so much, Sheldon, for that one and looking into that. But they always provide information for the deaf, for all our friends out there who are deaf. So make sure you guys attend those events. They have them out there all the time, if I'm correct.
You can get those tickets at smithcenter.com. That's Smith. Everybody knows how to spell smithcenter.com.
And, of course, Bradley, and why don't you give out the information, too, for how everybody can get the DVD that you have out on the John Searle story.
Yes, thank you, Ed. It's johnsearlestory.com, J-O-H-N-S-E-A-R-L-S-T-O-R-Y, one word, johnsearlestory.com.
And we'll also post that on the podcast for anyone who listens to us via the podcast. So make sure you guys check it out. It's an interesting story, a very interesting one, which we're talking about here tonight. And as we go into the rest of this night, now there's an ugly side to all this and everything, but I'm really curious.
There's always an ugly side, you know?
Yeah, there's always that ugly side, and I'm really curious how... You know, what is it that has caught all this controversy? It seems like someone who has this thing, and that, you know, I'm very curious. It seems like whenever someone comes up, like the hydro car and all this free energy stuff, there always seems to be claims of discreditation and everything else, but it's usually on the government side. Why do you think that is?
If I may, and then we'll get to John, of course. But, Ed, there's a really wonderful line, one of my favorite lines of John Searle in the film, where he's standing in front of his home, where most things happen throughout his life, and he says a very poignant encapsulation of his life, and it's basically this: once they see it, they want to own it. And the result of that, as he says it in the film, is greed and ignorance, and he calls it a terrible combination. John, isn't that about right?
That is correct. That is the biggest problem I've found for this technology, and I guess it happens to many other technologies all through time, and will do in the future be just the same. It's that people get a fantasy that they are so clever, they know everything. So anything that comes outside of what they know is impossible. There is nothing impossible except that the state of your mind makes it so.
Well, now, John, do you think some of this could have some of this has to do with the fact that if this technology got out to the public, that it would put so many people out of business?
Well, it will of the convention systems, but for everyone out of work, there are at least 10 new jobs for them. Because there's a lot of things we cannot do at this time because the cost of fuel, cost to set up roads and petrol stations and that is too high, so we just forget it. With this SUG, we can go in and we can do work there. We can help, like in Africa, people who are in the bush. They have no electricity. They can't do nothing for themselves. They need water. They need it clean. They have no power to do it. The SUG will give them a new lease of life. Not only the energy to use, but they can pump the water and purify it. So disease will decrease. And that alone would be worth all my suffering through my life, trying to get this to the marketplace.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Are you kidding?
We could do that. Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, cure for, it's like we have so many, there are so many drugs out there on the in the field of medicine, legitimate drugs, not all these freaky drugs that are out there that put rubber things in your colon.
Don't go there. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, that had something to do with Brian Dunning, which is very legitimate. But, you know, there are all these fake things out and things like that if we have something legitimate that would create energy that would free us from things like oil.
Wires.
You know, and believe it or not, if we look at our dependency on wires, every time there is a hurricane, tornado, sometimes even just windstorms, earthquake, you know, how everything we have shuts down.
Not only that, it's a problem.
We lose communication with the world around us, and we're basically back in the Stone Age. Some type of system like this would free us of all that.
Well, the beauty of the IGV is that you can meet a storm out at sea, and you can reduce it. We can do it with aircraft, but it's so costly, they won't do it. But the IGV is a different kettle of fish. It does not cost anything to operate, and you can send it out to deal with storms. And because it's so wonderful, it drops down at the center of the storm, and as it gets nearer and nearer to the bed, it is absorbing all the energy from it, and therefore the wind drops back, the speed drops, and things return to normal.
Yeah.
But the big clouds, they release their water out at sea.
What size of a device would you need to do that, though? Wouldn't it have to be huge?
For a real craft that you could go out to meet any condition, I think you've got to look at something about 200 feet in diameter. That's an unmanned vehicle,
yeah. Or
radio controlled.
That's interesting. So,
but the point is, we have the technology, we have that know-how. What we're lacking is the people to make it happen.
I like that line. We have the technology, we can make it bigger, faster, stronger, whatever it is on the bionic man. You know, that's what that sounds like. We have the technology, we just need to use it.
Yeah,
that is correct.
I've seen that so many times. You know, there's a lot of technology out there that is just not being applied. Recently, there was the fellow that owns Virgin Airlines, the eccentric millionaire that goes out and does all this stuff.
Yeah, Richard Branson.
Yes, Branson. He invested in the first private space craft, or actually the interspace craft that flew up into space, if I'm correct. Wasn't he the one to invest in that?
And won the award. Can I put in here, he used to be very interested in this work. That's why he didn't back any other system. But after he heard I was robbed of everything, and he knew I was an old man and not in the best of health, he could not see me possible put another team together and train them to produce the IGV. That's why he went and backed the space plane.
Hmm. Well, what about the work you guys, you have been doing, and the group that you are, your investor, have been doing here in the U.S.?
Well, we are proceeding in Miami, discussing with a company I visited for a month just a few weeks back, and I feel that things will go ahead. We will set up a base there. There is another company in Miami also interested to support the work. We are also looking at California, so we won't be far from you if we set up base. So you're better to pop in and have a look and a cup of tea what we're doing.
We'd love to do that. That'd be awesome. Yes.
Be great. Actually, I just moved from the Miami area down there, South Florida. I was in Fort Lauderdale. So.
I know. We're trying to break him in. It's a Californian, and he's fighting it, I think.
I'm struggling with that one.
We also been up in Canada looking at three companies, but they're financially not in position to start yet. But later on, they may be able to commence. But then we I'm going to come to Arizona, I think it's in August, to do a live show and talk to some companies who are interested to back the technology. So we are basically here in the USA, and boy, if we all stood up behind our elect leader, we could make things happen. We could turn America greener than it's ever been for 1,000 years. The deserts could be a paradise. We could leave behind us for our grandchildren and their children a sunny, beautiful, that will ask, how did they do it? And it's the same as the pyramids. They were not built by one man. It was the nation getting behind their leader that made it happen. Yeah. And we are still confused today how they did it.
So out here in California, that would actually be the Serial Magnetics Limited?
That's correct.
Okay. And, you know, there, I think there's a site for your investors and everything there on the website. But you have a main website, too, isn't it? The what's the main website, your official
website?
Well,
the main website is this,
SerialSolution.com?
SerialSolution.com. There are so many around now. It's a job to remember. And the other one is Swallow Command.
Okay. I was just the reason I mentioned that is because there's actually photographs here of a lot of these SEGs, and they're quite large, and some of these standard magnetizer systems and things like that that are out there.
Yeah, now the magnetizer is not a normal magnetizer. It is a special design, very complicated machine that actually put a mass of bubbles, magnetic bubbles, in a form of a wave. No other magnetizers can do that. And that's because we are making the electrons all uniform motion, in uniform motion. And the wave is there. On a analyzer, you see that the lower half of the wave is packed solid with some items. There are electrons being compressed to the lower level. And the roller set, it's a roller set because there are 8 segments to form that roller, sits on that wave, and the reaction between it and the plate causes it to rotate. The effects of the moving wave causes the wave to move forward. And as you see on the marker, 200 revs a minute on something that shouldn't be moving, it's wonderful to watch. In fact, we'll be in California in the next few days, and I'm sure that Morris would set it up to show you what the scientists say is impossible. You can see with your own eyes in a matter of days that they're wrong.
Well, Reap and I would love to do that.
That's, yeah, and he can show you 2 other demonstrations to show you what the copper does. It does some things a bit more than I thought it did. But it's interesting to watch. You can have a lamp, 30-watt lamp, and approach it, which has a winding around the base of it, towards it, and it will light up, and will remain light up as long as you want. And aluminium say, another demonstration to show you that the copper does lift the roller off its surface and maintain it, and also the aluminium does the same. So the scientists are wrong. They've got a lot to learn.
Now, we're coming up to the end of the hour. I want to thank you both for coming on. You know, it's been a very good conversation. Now, I have one question is, how long do you think before you're ready to spring this on the world? I mean, do you have a time frame for that?
Well, it's all based on money, finance becoming available.
It always does, yeah.
Yeah, but the model of the IGV is slow going because of the finance, and we want it so perfect that we can demonstrate how the parts work by radio control.
Good. Now, as we come to the end, I think that it's appropriate if we give you guys both the chance just to kind of make some final statements about the device itself. I mean, just who wants to go first?
Well, I will, and we'll let John wrap up the show.
Gotcha.
Thanks, Reap. I'd just like to say to your audience, first, thank you, Ed and Reap, for your time here and for letting us come and address your audience it was an enjoyable hour. What I've found over the years knowing John Searle is that he is sincere. I think you hear that in his voice. I think you hear that in what he says.
Absolutely.
And my study of the man has led me to this point. Something extraordinary was happening. And I look forward to the day when those people that come forward and want to challenge him do indeed come forward and challenge him, because it's like he said in a very amusing way the other day. He said, you know, you don't have to spy on me. You don't have to sneak up on me. Just come over, come in the front door, sit down, have a chat, have a cup of tea, and we'll talk about it. Thank you, guys. John?
Yeah, it's been our pleasure, really.
Yeah, thanks so much, Bradley. And John, what about your wrap-up comments?
Well, I like people to realize that only take a dollar from a million people a month into a center point to get this technology on the marketplace in America. Give the power to the people now. Don't wait till it's too late.
Outstanding.
Yes.
And John, can't wait. We're going to hold you to your California info now.
Yeah, we're looking forward to seeing
photographs
of you there, looking at the models that we have done to show people how things work.
Outstanding. Got to thank everyone out there for tuning in tonight. And, of course, want to thank ReapRadio.net and Jackalope 105 FM for having us, and all you listeners out there.
Yeah.
So, Danny, Reap, how about taking us out?
You blew my cover.
I always do that, man. It's a force of habit. Don't forget Brian Dunning. Tomorrow night.
Thank you both, gentlemen. It was a great conversation.
Thanks, Reed.
Yes. Loved having you on. All right.
Thanks,
that wraps up Dread Radio.
I'll see you soon.
Yes, please. Look forward to talking to you guys again in the future.
Have a Bailey. Give you up.
Well, thanks so much, gentlemen. You've been wonderful.
All right. This has been Dread Radio, and we're good for tonight. I'll talk to you later, Ed.
All right, talk to you later.
All right,
take care, fellas.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
See you hanging round, starting swearing bound, and this black hole of duck for me. Silently within, with hands touching skin, shock breaks my disease, and I can breathe. And all of your ways, all you dream, falls on me, it falls on me, and your beautiful sky. All my words for me. Darkness in my veins, I never could explain, and I wonder if you ever see. Will you still be?